identified numbers. So, and I just heard from a couple of board members who are going to be calling in a little late. So, we'll just work with what we have and hopefully we will be good.
You have to leave at one, Mayor?
Yeah, I keep saying two, but it's one, a CCM call with the Dalio Foundation.
Okay. They got money for you?
One never knows. I didn't ask that before I accepted the call. So,
yep.
No, not that I'm aware of. I think it's more of a think tank exercise on a couple of things. But I saw Aaron Stewart jump on. Nice to see you, Aaron. Hope all is well.
Hello.
Hi.
All's good, Mayor.
Oh, good. Glad to hear. Haven't seen you in a long time.
It's been a while.
I know. You've been on a wild ride here. Congrats on the baby coming.
Thank you.
Excited for you. Yeah, it's an exciting time.
I've hit the 6-month mark, so 3 months to go.
Oh, wow. Congrats. Yeah. So far, so good.
Getting bigger by the day and hungrier.
So am I, but that's not the reason, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's getting bigger at home, right?
Sitting at home eating.
And I keep coming to the office. I can't afford any more than that.
I can tell you're in the office with the pilgrims in the background there, so.
Yeah. I'm in front of something that's a little controversial, so I keep my head there.
Before you get started, I really have to bite on that. If you could move your head so we can see what's so controversial. Oh, I see. Okay. Thank you.
It's a WPA painting that was taken out of one of our buildings, and they were framed up, and so I don't know. It's controversial. I keep saying, can't we get a different one and put it back on my desk? So it is our history, though. So we'll see. Anyways, I think we should start the meeting. I hope all is well with everyone. Hope everyone's feeling well and weathering this storm, both with their community and with their families safely and well. So at 12:02, I'll officially call the meeting to order. At this time, I'm going to ask Kim to kind of notice a roll call so we can see who's on the line.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Based on RSVPs, I will go through who I've heard from. I've also seen a few additional folks hop on, so I'm going to try and get everybody in here. And at the end, if I did not call your name, we'll allow for a time for additional member towns to announce themselves. So please indicate that you are here when I call your name. Chairperson Marsha LeClaire, East Hartford.
Here.
Eric Anderson, Andover.
Here.
Brandon Robertson, Avon.
Here.
Chris Edge, Berlin.
Here.
Sandra Pierog, Bolton.
Here.
John Coleman, Bloomfield.
Here.
Bob Bessel, Canton.
Here.
Mark Walter, Columbia.
Here.
John Elsesser, Coventry. Jim Hayden, East Granby.
Present.
Lori Spielman, Ellington.
Here.
Chip Beckett, Glastonbury.
Here.
John Ward, Granby.
Here.
Luke Bronin, Hartford. Kayla Roscoe, Hartford. Tony Moran, Mansfield.
Here.
Scott Shanley, Manchester.
Here.
Aaron Stewart, New Britain.
Here.
Robert Lee, Plainville.
Here.
John Mayer, Rocky Hill.
Here.
Mark Shoda, Southington.
Here.
Mike Rosentolland.
Here.
Mike Picaro, Vernon.
Present.
Gary Cantor, West Hartford.
Here.
Matt Hart, West Hartford. Mike Grell, Weathersfield. Erica Wazinski, Willington.
Here.
And Chris Kervick from Windsor Locks.
Here.
Excellent. So I know Matt said he'd be calling in a little later. Is there any other member towns present at this time that I did not call?
Peter Souza, Windsor.
Excellent. Hi, Peter. Is there anyone else?
Hi, Kim. It's Kathy Lutz.
Hey, Kathy. How you doing?
Good.
I'm actually going to do an agency roll call next, so we will start with Kathy Lutz from Rome Smith & Lutz. I've got Becky Nolan from Metro Hartford. Alex Johnson, Capital Workforce Partners.
Here.
Grayson Wright, CTDOT.
Here.
Maureen Lawrence, CTDOT. Mark Mazzaro from Eversource.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Maureen is here. I couldn't get my microphone on mute.
Is that you, Maureen?
Yes, I couldn't get my phone on mute.
Okay, super. Thank you.
And Becky Nolan here is the same issue.
Okay, Becky, thank you. Do we have anybody else from outside organizations on the call?
Randy Collins,
Matt Pastor, Office of Policy Management.
Okay, we've got OPM. What was your name again? I'm sorry.
Matt Pafford.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good, thank you. And we had one other individual. If you could please restate your name.
Randy Collins, CCM.
Randy, hi. How are you?
Ellen Graham from Senator Blumenthal's office.
Hi, Ellen. How you doing?
Good.
Great. Do we have anyone else?
Brett Folds from Senator Murphy's office.
Excellent. Anyone else? Okay, thank you. I think we are good. Mayor LeClaire, back to you.
Thank you so much, Kim. Thanks for that attention to the roll call.
Sure.
At this time, I would invite anyone with any public comment to speak. Is there anyone that would like to make any comments? Seeing none, we'll move along to approval of the minutes from the March 25th, 2020 meeting.
John Coleman, move approval.
Second, Chip Beckett.
Great.
All in discussion? Any discussion, corrections? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We can go right in. In your packet, there's several handouts.
Yep. Can I walk through those, Mayor?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very quickly, just to let you know, to reiterate, DOT with help from Tim Malone and CROG staff, I've got a $2 million grant to study an autonomous electric bus on the CT Fast Track. This is really exciting. It's the first of its kind in the country to demonstrate this. We'll keep you posted as it develops. It'll be very exciting. But the upshot is the bus would be autonomous on the guideway, but human guided during moving on streets in Hartford. So that's a very interesting demonstration for the future. So I wanted to highlight that and thank everybody in the DOT and the CROG Transportation Group for getting that going. So I've been an advocate for that for like 5 years and talked to USDOT, so I'm delighted. The second aspect is UConn has a Connecticut COVID-19 resource. And when we get later on to the discussion of COVID-19, there's a whole fire hose of information. And, CROG staff would like to figure out how we can help towns in the process of digesting all the stuff coming at you, as well as reopening and recovery plans. So we'll talk about that a little later. We have the DOT people on the line, and we're delighted that our financial reporting of timesheets now will be electronic to Connecticut Department of Transportation. We hope that this kind of automation and improvement in process will happen, that this public health emergency will have some positive silver lining of actually automating a lot of this stuff that used to be done by hand and paper. So we're delighted that that's moving ahead. And then later on, we sent a memo out on the role of CROG on reopening and recovery of from the COVID-19, and we'll talk about that later. But there's a whole variety of things we think we could do to add value to helping towns respond, particularly smaller communities, but not just that. And then last but not least is the Office of Fiscal Analysis report on the federal stimulus so far. The upshot is there's guessing is five different bills. We're done three, so there'll be two more. The last, which is actually pretty significant, might be an infrastructure bill. And we need to make sure that we have our oar in the water on things like finishing the Hartford rail line with double tracking and additional cars. as well as other transportation projects. So one of the things we're going to do is work on a letter to the federal delegation. I'm glad that we had the senator's staff join us, but basically get the Hartford Rail Line and the East-West Boston Rail is already on some wish lists. So those are my items on correspondence, and the other items we can take up later, Madam Chair.
Great, thank you very much. Anyone have any questions that they want to bring up that on anything that Lyle's discussed? If not, you can reach out to them directly. So did you want to walk through your chair's report too? Is there anything additional?
Yeah, I have more. I'll try to keep it brief.
As always.
I won't go through my monthly report. If there are questions after I finish, I'm happy to respond to them. We'll continue to do that. The upshot is we're trying to do two things at once, to continue doing regular business and also being helpful to towns on COVID-19. And as we get into that COVID-19 discussion, Cheryl and others can speak to what's already going on in terms of the emergency management side of that. But I wanted to mention a couple of things. As you recall, we did a request for proposals on the economic impact of the Hartford-Springfield-Boston rail line, and we actually got 6 responses to our RFP. We were a little nervous that we'd get nothing, but we got 6. And so Tim Malone is leading the effort to analyze those responses and come up with one, but it'll be very timely in terms of the going forward to have an economic impact analysis of Hartford-Springfield-Boston rail, so I want to mention that. The second thing, and we're wending our way through the bike share launch in this environment. I think we have an email out to Matt Hart in West Hartford on this, but we need to get some of our major towns on this to consider how we do bike share. And then last but not least is we're looking forward to our 4 different major regional plans that we have in terms of transportation, land use, and SEDS and others. And we're basically coming up with a framework. So I guess the theme, Madam Chair, is we're trying to be helpful on the COVID response, but also trying to keep regular regional business going forward. So I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Any questions for Lyle? Seeing none, we'll continue to move forward. People might want to put their microphones on mute. So next up is, who's up next?
Municipal Services.
Municipal Services. So isn't that
Peter?
Yeah, Peter. He's on the phone, right, Peter? You have a report?
Yes. The report's included in the handout packet. So just a variety of items relative to bids. And our last meeting was held a week or two ago, and it was a round table to see how towns are responding to the short term.
Peter, is he there? Peter?
Yep, sorry.
Oh, there. I thought we lost you.
Our report is included in the overall packet online. There's just a number of updates in terms of bid solicitations, and our last meeting was just a round table concerning the COVID response.
Okay.
Yeah, Mayor, excuse me, this is Kim. What we did, we actually, all the monthly reports, I just linked them on the chat, but in order to, move things along, if people had questions, maybe they could reach out individually, but the monthly reports were all sent out previously.
Okay, great, thank you. Any questions for Peter? If you need any information, you can reach out to the staff in regards to this. So next we'll move along to policy and planning. Who's taking that on?
Tim on the call?
So for policy and planning, we've been moving forward with the bike share, as Lyle had said. We've been finding that many many organizations that we're talking to are busy with other things right now, so it's taking a little bit of a back seat, but we're still plugging along.
We did have the RFP, so we'll be putting together tables for the RFP for the impact study. That's moving along nicely. We have some representation from DOT there.
Tim? Oh, we're having trouble hearing you, so you might have gone an earshot of someone else with a device.
I think sounds like you went to the other side of the moon. He'll be out.
Oh. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. I guess I just have to lean in really closely to my computer. So we have the RFP. We have a panel that's been put together. We have a couple people who are experts in economic development who are going to help us review those responses. We've got a pretty good and varied response to the RFP, as Lyle had said. We've also continued looking for additional, we're monitoring the upcoming schedules for some brownfields funding. So we're hoping that we can bring some more funding to the region. And also we're pursuing, we've been given some guidance from the Economic Development Administration that they are looking for projects. They got some money in the stimulus. And so we've been actually talking with East Hartford about trying to advance a project. And also they advised us on a project in Hartford. If anyone else has some ideas for economic development projects, the EDA is looking for them. So we are helping to coordinate that. I believe there's a couple other items in the package, and I'm happy to answer any questions people have.
Any questions for Tim? Thank you, Tim. Next, we'll move on to public safety and homeland security.
Mayor, this is Cheryl. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So as you'll see in your packet, we did activate our regional emergency support plan on March 18th. And the Regional Coordination Center is on full virtual activation at this point, with coordination being done by ESF 5 and 8, which is Emergency Management and Public Health. Our incident management team has been activated, and they've deployed an incident action plan, which is being reviewed by local public health directors on a weekly basis, and then being reissued. I believe we're on our seventh iteration of that at this point. And I have to give a shout out to Mayor Cantor and Matt Hart in West Hartford. We are operating our regional distribution site in West Hartford on Brixton Street at the Public Works facility. We are up and running every Wednesday. They're up and running right now, distributing equipment to long-term care facilities. They've added EMS into the mix this week, and the local public health as well. So this is our second week of operation. We have about 30 folks there running it, 10 National Guard. We have folks from DPH. And then we have the emergency manager, Bob McHugh from West Hartford, John Phillips, their public works director, and then Chiefs Priest and Riddick have been very helpful as well. So far that has been going very well. We get the amount of equipment we'll be receiving the day before, so it's not that easy to plan for it, but so far going well, and it's being run by Bill Perkins, who works for me at CROG.
Thank you, Cheryl. Any questions for Cheryl? What's the quantity that they're bringing in, Cheryl? Because I heard there's like dribs and drabs, and sometimes you go and you pick up one little bag or.
Yeah, the first week we had 16 pallets. It was a decent amount. Today I haven't gotten a full report yet, but I know from DPH that for the local public health, it was very limited this week, to the point where some of the health directors weren't sure if it was even worth picking up. Today, most of the equipment, from what I understand, is for EMS. They've added that component into the site starting this week. So the state DPH is coordinating with all the EMS providers in terms of what they're actually getting, and then we're distributing it to them. To be honest, Mayor, it seems to depend on the week.
Any other questions for Cheryl?
Yeah, one question. We heard today that Battelle is providing a decontamination system for N95 mask and non-cellulose type.
Yes.
Do you have any any information on where that would be done?
It's my understanding, and that did go out to all of the police and fire chiefs and EMS service leads. It's my understanding that that's all being done in New Haven, and that they could decontaminate quite a few masks. So what I can do is I can send that guidance out to Kim, and she can get it to all of you folks in case you haven't seen that. But from my understanding, it's being done only in New Haven at this point.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Cheryl. Transportation.
Wait, I have a question.
Yep, go right ahead.
I'm getting really confused. We're talking with our emergency management people and our health department people, and our supplies seem to be coming from Region 4 of the health districts. And now I really don't understand how the Council of Governments and the health district regions are overlapping. And are there two separate sets of deliveries, or is this all the same under different initials?
So Mansfield, so CROG operates Demis Region 3, and Mansfield is actually
it's Region 4.
Region 4. You're one of only one or two towns that's the case. In addition, we also have other communities who are members of different councils of governments, for instance, Middletown and Bristol, who I oversee for Homeland Security. So you would be dealing with Region 4.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions for Cheryl? If not, we'll move into transportation.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. John Coleman here. Lyle already touched on the autonomous bus pilot program. Also, as all of you, I hope, know, the Bond Commission did act on April 16th, and we got the full funding for the CROG-LOPSIT money.
Yep.
The Town Aid Road money, the Windsor Locks rail station, and additional rail cars for the Hartford line. CONDOT has also released a number of memos relating to their activities during COVID-19, and they continue to be progressing on all their construction projects, and are actually accelerating some of the projects because there's very little traffic on the roads, which allows them to do much more daytime work at a less expense than having to do evening and overnight work. And that's pretty much it. We have one action item under the MPO, which is a TIP amendment, which the Transportation Committee recommends unanimously.
If there's no objection, we can take up that action item now, John.
Madam Chair, I would move approval of the TIP amendment, which is a CMAQ-funded amendment to continue the funding of the statewide Transportation Demand Management Program. And again, it's been unanimously recommended by the Transportation Committee, and I so move.
Motion's on the floor. Move. Do I have a second?
Second.
Chris Edge, Berlin, second.
Great. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
So the next item that we're taking up, I'm wondering if we can take the second, additional number 7 up, the action item, just in case we run into time where we have to, where Senator Blumenthal will be getting on the call. So if there's no objection, I would like to take item 7 up. So resolution for HR consulting services.
Yeah. Pauline is the lead on that, Madam Chair.
So for sure. That. I recognize yep. Pauline.
Thank you. So this is our small towns have been asking for some time regarding some HR consulting services. And we did an RFP and we did interviews on March 31st. There was one firm that was head and shoulders above the rest, which the name is actually HR Consulting Group. And so we're requesting approval from the policy board to contract with them.
Holly, maybe you could describe what that would involve for towns once it's approved.
So this will make available to towns the ability to contract with HR Consulting Group to do various HR services, general HR training, class and compensation studies, and actually HR management across the board, benefits, payroll management, if they so choose. It's a whole suite of products that would be available to all of our towns.
John, well, move approval.
There's a motion on the floor. It was approved. Any additional questions? I wish I had known this was on the agenda. I just went into a contract with an HR consulting firm for day late, dollar short. I'll call for
Mayor
a vote.
Matt Hart.
Yes. Hartford. Yes, Matt. Go ahead.
This sounds like an exciting initiative. I want to thank Pauline for her work. Could you just explain how this would be paid for? Is this like an a la carte service that whatever town utilized the service would make a payment directly to?
Correct. It would be an a la carte service that would be available to our towns. I mean, the major benefit is that we've gone through a process and that we're doing the administration for the contract and overseeing that, so that it makes it easier. It's like many of our other programs, like the CRPC bids and like the online permitting, et cetera, that we have.
I could add to what that comment was. I think the main advantage here is you have, you know, a large contract where a lot of different towns will be able to use it. So you have a vetted vendor with enough business to sustain them and keep them interested. Otherwise, as we found, you know, if you just do one little small piece of business, you know, HR consultants won't return your phone calls. So the upshot here is a critical mass of business. They've been vetted, as Pauline has done the work with the response panel. And you have a guaranteed quality product. And again, it is sort of a pay-as-you-go a la carte menu, but at least there's a vendor in place that communities can use and that will be there for them. So that's sort of the upshot of it. But I think
can you send out a little bit more information on the company as well as the kind of costs associated with it if a town or municipality was to engage them?
Absolutely. Once we sign the contract, we'll send out all that information to our towns.
Perfect. And will you post it on the website too for access?
Yes. Okay. We will definitely do that.
And will we need to go through CROG to engage them, or just because we're a CROG, how will that work?
So you could reach out to them directly. You'd have to sign a side letter and then an individual proposal depending on what work that you wanted to do and what things that you wanted to do with them.
Do we know what their turnaround time is or what their staffing levels are?
So that was one of the questions that Mike Rosen from Tolland asked all of our interviewees, and we believe that they'll have the capacity to be able to accommodate the needs of the towns. And they have the ability to increase as well, depending on what the projects and what the assignments are.
So there might be a level, so I'm just thinking, so if they undertook a study for East Hartford and we were able to do an across-the-board assessment of directors' levels compensation, will that be available to other communities so that they understand that we fall into a 50,000 population range and this is what they came up with for compensation?
In terms of sharing across the towns, we could definitely, or
I'm just thinking because they're going to build on, they're going to do a study for me, you know, if I engage them, and then that would be a resource for them going forward that they'll be able to just copy into other communities. Is there an opportunity for that information to be shared globally amongst other towns?
So we would probably do that kind of sharing through us in terms of specific studies and things like that. And my expectation is that depending on the types of class and compensation studies and the size of the town, there might be opportunities for sort of cross utilization, if you will.
Right, and I know that there's nuances to every job description within there, so there are nuances, but I'm saying as a base rate if someone just wanted to get an idea, yeah. All right.
Can I ask a question, please?
Yeah.
Would it be possible for CROG to contract with them for area-wide compensation studies or something that we could then as individual towns buy into or use for, you know, as part of our contract with them, so they wouldn't have to do a fresh one every time they study one of our towns?
That's definitely a possibility. We can take that up as something that we could look into for municipal services for next year's work plan in terms of coordinating across towns. The challenge will be sort of deciding on which positions and the job descriptions, making sure that they're comparable or at least close across the towns. That's the biggest challenge, I think.
Right, and what the requirements are within the job description. So we ask for sometimes a higher level than is required.
Yep.
So those nuances have to be accounted for rather than a one kind of size fits all. But
Madam Chair, this is Mike Rosen from Tolland. I was on the interview panel with Pauline and a few other folks. And I just wanted the vendor that we selected, they were really reassuring with this fact. They said that prior to engaging to go, you know, if there's a contract or if there was an idea to do a compensation classification study for a singular town, they recommended actually reaching out to the network through CROG to see if anybody else wanted to get on board as well. So there would be cost sharing amongst the communities and it wouldn't be duplication of effort. So I think that's a good idea. I know there's a lot of towns in CROG, but I think it would be good to put the word out if there's a compensation study being done, that people can get in on it, and maybe it makes sense to have similarly sized towns come together so that everybody had sort of a uniform salary range and things like that. So they have considered that regional approach to doing their services.
Great. I don't know what just happened to my...
Oh. I think the senator's getting ready to come on, Mayor. You may want to just do a quick vote.
I would like to call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Seeing the motion carries. Thank you. So I believe that our screen it went to allow us the opportunity to welcome Senator Richard Blumenthal to speak and share insights with us and related to the COVID-19 update with a broader discussion to our CROG membership. And we're excited to have you back with us, Senator. And thank you for the important work that you're doing and the advocacy on behalf of all the residents of Connecticut. So we're excited to have you before us and we welcome you. So the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. I don't know whether you can see me, but I can see all of you.
Nope,
we can't see you.
Can't see you.
Your camera must be off.
Let me just see whether I can correct that.
Hello? Can you
have me? We can hear you, though.
We're going to try to arranged to be seen here. Okay. Can you see me now?
Yes, Senator, we can.
Great.
I have everyone muted right now.
Wonderful. I'm really pleased to be back with you, and thank you for having me again. I would like to update you as to what the Senate did yesterday, and hopefully the House will do today or tomorrow, which is to pass the next relief bill. It's actually an interim bill. We called the last bill the third emergency relief bill, COVID-3. This is COVID-3.5, and we hope there will be a fourth bill. But this one is significant because it replenishes the Paycheck Protection Program. I'm sure that every one of you have heard from your small businesses about this program running out of money. There were thousands of applicants in Connecticut, millions around the country that were in line. In fact, many approved for more funding and then the funding was exhausted. In Connecticut so far, about $4 to $5 billion has been approved to we don't have a final count of businesses, but it's probably well over 2,000. And these loans are very important in providing a lifeline for small businesses hanging by a thread. At the same time, too many of these loans have gone to the bigger of the small businesses. In fact, some of the franchises and chains, and you probably heard about that issue as well. But this new tranche of money, a total of about $370 billion, remember the first tranche was $350 billion, will make possible loans to many small businesses that can be converted into grants. They can be converted into grants as long as payrolls are maintained. You know the details of this program. It will be very worthwhile, but still, for businesses that are shut down now and will be for a month or two, we need even more money. And that's why I think we will need a fourth package for those small businesses alone. At the same time, this package provides for hospitals another $75 billion and for more testing, $25 billion. That's kind of a rough overview of all that it does in brief summary. But we also still need more money for hospitals. In every one of your towns, hospitals either serve or actually are located, and they are literally struggling to survive financially. And so we need to provide probably even more money to save them and enable them to buy the protective gear that their frontline workers need, as well as cover the increasing expenses of this pandemic, the declining numbers of elective surgeries, which are the financial bread and butter, and of course, the dwindling individual contributions and donations because of the hit that the markets have taken. Let me tell you my biggest disappointment with this interim proposal: no money for state governments or local governments. We pushed very hard, and I know you followed this in the press. I'm not telling you anything you don't know right now, but we really pushed very, very hard, almost to the point of saying we're not going along with this package. And we yielded, I will be very blunt, because of the urgency of that Small Business Protection Program and the hospital aid that will be contained in this $485 billion program. But one of our priorities in the next package is aid to state and local governments for all the reasons that you know better than anyone in Washington, D.C. The looming deficits, the increased needs, the dwindling tax revenues, all we know have affected your fiscal situation. So we're going to press for it in the next package. I can pledge to you that it will be at the very top of our list because we came close to accomplishing it this time, and we felt a sense of urgency for those small businesses that are really still struggling, and we're going to fulfill our obligation to them, but we still feel a very strong sense of obligation to you, and I can pledge to you, I know our delegation is very much united in pursuing that goal. So I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
And this is the new remote you were trying?
Yes, Senator, this is Scott Shanley.
So I'm going to see if I can get that done this afternoon.
If I could ask a question, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just, I have a number 34, 35, and they have a very legitimate concern about how this is really going to be paid for and who's going to pay for it. And of course, eventually it's going to be them, not so much those of us at the tail end of our careers. Has there been a discussion about how to move forward with financing this, or is that, I mean, is that just something that's left until the dust settles?
Well, you know, that's a really important question. And many of us have thought about it. We talked about it. We've spent now $2.3 trillion. And likely in the next package, there'll be trillions more. If there is a next package, the majority leader has said maybe there's no need for a next package. I'd be interested in your views on that point. From what I hear, talking to the people of Connecticut, I just, as a matter of fact, just came back from New Haven, where I was at the opening of a decontamination facility that will clean, disinfect, and decontaminate masks, the filters that go in the N95 masks, and potentially other protective gear. So we're going to have to manufacture a lot more of that personal protective equipment, masks, gowns, gloves, boots, ventilators. The cost just in that section or segment of our healthcare system is going to be very significant. The point is that the costs outside of this government burden are going to be profoundly significant. The cost to the private sector, the cost to local governments, the cost to state governments. And so I think the best way to think about this federal money is that it's an investment. We can't afford not to do it. We will pay more later if we fail to address this healthcare crisis. We will pay a lot more later if we fail to enable some of these struggling small businesses to survive and provide for families and workers that have to put food on the table and pay their rent and utility. So these costs are staggering, no question about it, but the costs of failing to make these commitments, I think, will be even greater. And I think we have bipartisan support. Well, I know we did because yesterday the vote was unanimous. And I think we will have bipartisan support for the next package as well, hoping that there will
be. And I'm not suggesting that it's not important to do. During the crisis, the best time to talk about the fact that it's going to have to be paid for, because people are more than willing to pay later for the enormous benefit today. But if it's pushed off 3 or 4 years before we begin to even talk about that, I'm afraid that the opportunity for people to have open minds about paying this will fade. That's all.
I think that's a really good point. And, you know, at some time, we will have to face the need to tighten our belts. And when I say tighten our belts, I don't necessarily mean cutting spending, but avoiding tax cuts. Remember, we had a $1 trillion tax cut. Now we can debate, you know, and I have my very strong views on the merits or lack thereof of that tax cut, which in my personal view, I don't ask anyone to agree or disagree, but in my personal view, that tax cut benefited primarily the corporation. And some of them, by the way, are now asking for bailouts, who use the benefits of those tax cuts to do stock buybacks and executive compensation. You know, what's past is past, but that $1 trillion is an example of what we cannot do in the future in tax cuts. So yes, there are profound questions here. You're absolutely right. We should be concerned about it. Right now, my concern, to go to your point really, is to make sure that there is sufficient oversight and transparency that waste, fraud, favoritism are eliminated. And I will be proposing a major oversight initiative that will provide for even more disclosure, more transparency, protection of the Inspector General, for example. If he has bad news, he shouldn't be fired. He should be independent, objective. And I think ultimately we're going to need some kind of commission, just as we did after 9/11. I've called it a pandemic review commission that will be objective, independent, not to lay blame. Partisan politics should have no part of this, but just what can we learn? And just to put you all, I'm sure you've been reading, so I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but we are potentially in for a second wave in the fall and winter that could be even worse than this wave, which is what happened with H1N1, if you recall, in 2009. It's what happened with the Spanish flu. And the CDC director yesterday, as a matter of fact, warned about a second wave that might be worse because it would coincide with the regular flu season. So the costs of this whole thing are really horrendous. I'm not here to be the messenger of, you know, bad news, but I think we all need to be aware of the need for potentially some additional belt tightening in the future.
Madam Chair?
Thank you. Is there any other questions? Yes, Lyle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, thank you very much for being here, and we appreciate your updating us on all this. Obviously, it's a very fluid situation. I wanted to get to the reopening and recovery phase. Obviously, we're going to get there at some point. I've heard rumors about an infrastructure bill further down the road, and I guess the question I have for you, if that comes about, how do we make sure we get our oar in the water on shovel-ready projects such as finishing the Hartford rail line or other kinds of transportation priorities in the region where we're more or less ready to go? I guess my concern is we get outflanked by other political forces. I guess the question is, how do we make sure we get our oar in the water in any future infrastructure bill part of a recovery plan?
Another great question. I can tell you that, first of all, from day one of my service in the United States Senate, which is 10 years ago, and from day one of this administration, I have advocated an infrastructure bill, not just $1 trillion, but much more massive. I was the ranking member on the Surface Transportation Subcommittee of the Commerce Committee. So a number of these projects will go through the Commerce Committee. I'm no longer the ranking member, but I'm still very active in this area. And to put it in a nutshell, our entire delegation, John Larson, Senator Murphy, myself, our whole delegation is committed to infrastructure. And we will be knocking at the door, in fact, pummeling at the door with our projects. But before then, we will need to get that infrastructure program done. And you're right that it could well be a part of a future relief package. Now, if you notice, I've been calling them relief packages, not stimulus packages, because I think the task right now is, in fact, relief. Our economy is on pause. Some have said life support. I would rather be somewhat more hopeful and optimistic and say our economy, parts of our economy are on pause. But an infrastructure program, when people are ready to go back to work, you can't have a stimulus program that will create jobs when people are not permitted to go back to those jobs. And that's when a stimulus program and an infrastructure effort will be especially meaningful. And I'm hoping that either in the next package, call it a stimulus package, or the one after, the fourth or fifth, we will see infrastructure as a major priority. The president's mentioned it. All of us in Congress have mentioned it. I think there's a strong degree of consensus.
Thank you. And I hope that infrastructure bill even for includes a broader sense, and that it includes rolling out 5G in communities across the board and even in the rural areas, as well as fiber, and how important that connection is to keeping businesses going and connecting people to the workplace and making sure that we can function in a crisis situation, much like we find ourselves, many of us in municipal government at a crossroads, because we do not have that capability to send our people home to work remotely on all fronts. So I think that's important. And we see that connectivity so important to educating our students in schools and finding ways to fulfill that educational requirement without technology is a hurdle in my community, and I'm sure we're not alone in other communities. So I would hope that there is a very broad and engaging conversation on how we can, as a country, can make sure that we use the technology the best of our ability.
That's a really important point. In fact, I've led a group of, I think it's 26 of my colleagues in writing to Schumer and McConnell, urging that the next package have broadband connectivity as a priority. That's a really important point, not only for students and businesses, but for our whole society. People have to be connected. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator. Is there any other questions for Senator Blumenthal?
Chris Edge from the town of Berlin. I'm wondering if we might know when our businesses might have the ability to apply for the, as you had said, COVID 3.5 through the PPP program.
Well, the House hopefully will vote on it. My guess is tomorrow. There's talk about it doing it, the House doing it today, but I think more likely tomorrow. But one way or the other, I think that money will be available immediately. So by the end of the week, Monday, I would continue the application process right away.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Sure.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the senator?
I have a question, Bob Bessel from Canton. With the with the relief money being exhausted in 13 days, first round, how long do you think this package, this tranche, will last before it needs to be replenished? I mean, basically, I'm asking, what is the total demand out there, you know, from the Senate's point of view?
We don't really know how much demand there is. We're going to be deluged with more applications. That's my guess. And your question really goes to a point that I've been making repeatedly, which is we need to make sure that there is full, fair access, that the companies or businesses that have established relationships with banks are not the only ones that get this money, that there is full, fair opportunity for all businesses. But I will tell you, my own personal view is we're going to need more money for this program. In fact, I advocated that there be $500 billion, not $370, because we know we're going to come back, or we'll have to come back if we want this program to reach all of the businesses that are struggling to survive. But we don't know what the total universe is, and because the resources may not be able to meet all of the demand, it's all the more important that there be full access for the smaller of the small businesses.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the senator? Seeing none, I want to thank you so much for really making time for us. It's important for us really to get it right from the, you know, where you are engaging in that type of conversation. We so appreciate your representation and your willingness to be open and honest with us about where things stand in Washington, and we really appreciate it. And I can't, I know I'm echoing the sentiments of my colleagues who are also on this and who are on the front lines saying thank you. I think
You are on the front lines, so I'm happy to come back anytime you'd like me to.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Madam Chair, Senator, we have a meeting in a month, so perhaps we can invite you again, Senator. So unfortunately, in the sense that we need it very badly to hear from you again. So,
well, I'll be back.
Great.
We appreciate it. We'll set it up. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Take care, everyone. Be safe.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You too. You as well. So, all right, so we'll return to our agenda items. Let me see where we are. Is there a generalized, under the same presentation update, are we engaging in a conversation amongst ourselves in regards to COVID-19?
Madam Chair, we sent out a memo on this as a starter on how CROG might help some towns on the reopening planning reopening planning, testing, equipment, procedures. And our suggestion here to the board is that we would watch the evolving aspects of this and come back with you to help people sort out a plan, if they wish, for reopening and recovery, and listen to what board members have on their minds.
Well, I think there is an established protocol for recovery, and I'm wondering if maybe Cheryl, through through the emergency management, maybe one of the they can kind of outline that in a more detailed sense for local governments to kind of use as a guideline back. And that's appreciated. I know that in the packet you did provide this document, which kind of gives communities a sense of what they need to do. But I know there's it's much bigger than that. So for those that don't have the overarching plan, maybe that can be provided. So I appreciate that. Is there any questions in regards to that? Nope, if none, we'll move on. We're going to go back to Capital Workforce Partners number 5G to see if there's any discussion, any
point? Yeah, I'm here, Mayor.
Okay, great. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, Alex Johnson, Capital Workforce Partners. Thank you, Mayor, for giving me an opportunity to brief the council on where Capital Workforce Partners is in this particular environment. And I'll just note that, you know, from an onset, the senator spoke very clearly around our response to the COVID crisis. And I would note in the workforce community, we are gearing up to respond to a similar crisis, but it's the crisis of large numbers of individuals being dislocated from employment. And as you, I know you followed the numbers, but as of last week, there were over 390,000 Connecticut residents filing for unemployment compensation. This is a crisis, recognizing that we have a state of 3.5 million people. When you do the math, a tremendous number of adults are unemployed and will be needing to seek support to get themselves re-engaged. There are a couple of items I did include in your package, and I'd like to just go through a couple quickly and really just acknowledge the fact that although Capital Workforce Partners has been closed to the public since March 23rd as a result of the governor's Stay Safe, Stay at Home initiative, we are open for business, and our career centers, our America Job Centers, our comprehensive centers are open for business. So I do want you to know that we are here to support the massive number of individuals who are being dislocated from their employment. Just a couple of quick funding items I just wanted to bring to your attention, because as a group, I've been speaking to you off and on for the last year relative to Capital Workforce Partners respond to the Connecticut Apprenticeship Initiative. A year ago, the state made available $5 million to support opportunities to identify key sectors in our community and to build a pipeline to prepare unemployed individuals as well as youth in school for these opportunities. Capital Workforce Partners submitted an application a year ago for $5 million. Unfortunately, that application was not funded, but Governor Lamont made an additional $5 million available this past year. That application was released in January. We responded in February, and I've included in your package the press release that notes of that $5 million Capital Workforce Partners has received $2.2 million of that five. So this is a desperately needed resource to enable us to begin to respond to the crisis that I just mentioned. Also good news in that regard, because in the plan that we had developed, it really captured over 4,500 jobs in our communities, a large amount in manufacturing, a large number in healthcare and construction. So we had assembled and identified far more jobs than the $5 million was able to support, because with $5 million, we could support serving 1,000 individuals. So even if we had got full funding, we know it would not have been sufficient. And we communicated that information to various members of our state legislature, and they felt compelled to ensure that we had a resource. So also in the state bond legislation that was passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the governor, there is a provision in that bond package, and I gave a copy in your package, where there is a notation that Capital Workforce Partners or the Hartford Workforce Board should receive no less than $5 million of bond authority to continue this work. You know, obviously it has been passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the governor, but we still need to ensure that the governor releases those funds, and we would like your support as we begin that effort. The other item I wanted to bring to your attention is we have included in your package a call center document, because as I mentioned, our centers are closed to the public, but we are open for business. We have been doing an aggressive job in terms of building our capacity to serve individuals virtually. So we have our staff providing virtual services to connect to customers. We have created a call center number. It's like a hotline number for individuals who need support in trying to find a job, for employers, because even in this environment, employers are still looking for individuals. So there's a number or a key for employers to seek our support. And then we're also providing general guidance to these UI claimants, because as we all know, the Department of Labor has been backlogged in processing, and people are just reaching out, how can I get access? What do I need to do? So we are providing assistance to those individuals. And we are providing this support in Spanish and English. So I would note that if individuals need your support, and I'd like to get this or I will send this communication, put this flyer out to you individually, because I do want you to know, and for the residents of your communities to know, that the America's Job Center is open and available to provide supports to both our job seekers and our business customers. And I'd just like to just note one last thing. As we're thinking about responding to this crisis of massive numbers of dislocated workers, we are building and we're working with the Governor's Workforce Council as well as the other workforce boards. And we're going to be launching probably within the next 2 weeks an initiative called Skill Up. And Skill Up is a platform of online tools where individuals can train themselves in various career level occupations. Those tools also have basic skills, tools to help individual, you know, increase their basic skills in reading and math. It is assessment tools, so you could do an individualized assessment. And we're using two nationally known products, the Metrics Learning products, as well as 180 Skills. And these are going to be online training platforms that we're going to be launching as a statewide. We hope that the governor will be making the announcement probably in about 2 weeks. And that would be another tool that we will make available to all of the residents of the state of Connecticut. These tools will allow individuals to upgrade their skills while they're in this capacity of being at home. It's available to individuals who will be looking for a job, or at the same time, individuals who may even be recalled back to work, but want to advance their skill sets while they're home so that they compete for higher level jobs in their particular companies. So again, I just wanted to report that the system is here. We have a daunting task in terms of massive numbers of individuals. And I'll just also note that although we're going to be responding to this crisis of dislocated workers, we still feel obligated, and we're still going to support individuals who haven't benefited from this the economy, those second chance individuals, young people, individuals with other barriers who still need supports to get into this system. So wanted to provide you with this update and encourage you to put out the word on our behalf that the centers are open. If individuals need our supports and services, give us a call because we're here to provide support to your communities. Thank you, Mayor, for this opportunity.
Thank you, Alex. It's Mayor Stewart. I'm taking over as Mayor LeClaire had to jump off to another Zoom meeting. That's all our lives consist of these days, right? So we're going back to the agenda. Kim, can you correct me if I'm wrong here, but are we going to number 9, which doesn't really exist either anymore?
Item 9.
Correct. So, legislative update.
Yes.
Kathy Lutz made the official end of the session.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you've all seen that. There is every belief that given some easing of the group numbers, they will be back in special session at least one. There's a lot that needs to happen, and while there is not a technical need to do a budget adjustment because we have the biennial budget, they do always adjust it, and in that respect, because there is no sense of how bad the hit is going to be fiscally, the preference is to wait a little bit longer to try to adjust the budget. I mean, it's the obvious things, but things that are not quite as obvious: lack of income, state income from the gasoline tax, from capital gains, from sales tax, all the things that contribute substantially to the income of the state. So that will be left down the road, the budget adjustment. Agencies also have things in their packages left undone. So legislative leadership has reached out to committee chairs and rankings saying, you know, keep your priorities in front of you because we are going to be putting things together. I don't expect that there'll be much of anything able to be done until even maybe midsummer. They have, you know, they talked about trying to get folks in to vote a handful at a time, maybe 10 at a time. That's just not practical. But if they can get it to the point where you can have, if you picture the House chamber, right, if you can have folks every other row, every third seat type of thing, they're working on all of that. So so that's where it is. They have a lot of mechanical things to figure out before they can get back in. But they do have every intention of doing that. You all also probably saw the technical difficulties they had with the bond commission meeting. I think they attempted it 3 times before it actually happened. And other than that, we're starting to see now the kind of roll call of folks who are announcing that they are not going to be running again. So we're compiling all that as well. Other than that, there really, really is not anything current to report.
Okay. Any questions? Thanks very much, Kathy. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
The CRAG annual meeting. Lyle?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have, by bylaws, a requirement to have a June annual meeting. I spoke with our corporate counsel, Robert DiCrescenzo. My suggestion on this is to have a board motion with a whole series of recitations on the emergency, and that we postpone this till the fall. I don't think it makes any sense to try and have a meeting in June. So my suggestion, if there's a sense of the board, is to come back to the May meeting with a postponement. I didn't want to bring it in today because I'm hoping by the end of May we'd have a sense of when we could postpone it to. Right now it's probably too early to even guess. So my request, I guess, to the board is, are there any objections to us coming back with a resolution with those emergency recitations and postponing the meeting, notwithstanding the bylaws, to in the fall? So I just want to check if there are any concerns about us doing that.
I have no objections here. I think that's a smart idea. Anyone else?
I agree.
You don't?
I agree too.
I can't imagine, this is Tony Moran from Mansfield, I can't imagine going to a meeting in early June, to tell you the truth.
So, Madam Chair, if that's sort of a sense of the board, that's what my plan would be, to come back with a May resolution with a postponement, with, again, the sort of legal recitations in terms of why we're doing it and all that. So.
Sounds good, Lyle.
Okay.
All right, any other business today? Seeing none, we'll entertain him.
Madam Mayor, John Coleman, move we adjourn.
Motion made. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So long.